We are in Siman Shin Ches. Got some very interesting things tonight. A couple of slightly complex discussions, but I'm going to try to bring it down to the, to get to the core issues here. So let's begin with Sif Hey. Again, we are in Shin Ches, and we're getting started with Sif Hey. So this is actually, I was just my father. We are actually going to be going back, all the way back to our first shiur when we spoke about Muksa. You might remember there was the Gemara about Shlomo and David. When David HaMelech passed away, and Shlomo HaMelech asked the Shaila if he could move the body. So the Gemara there said that when he asked the Shaila about it, that was one of our rayas, that Muksa is a very, very old Dirabanan, an old, old Takana, because already at the time of David and Shlomo, they had Muksa. So the Chachamim said, yeah, you can move him with a kikar or with a tinok. That was the response. So we're gonna deal with that issue today. So take a look at Sif Hei. We're in Siman Shin Ches, Sif Hei. Says the Shulchan Aruch as follows. Yesh matirim letaltel kli shemalachta le'iser. Afilo mechama letzel al yedei kikar o tinok. Let's just remind ourselves. A kli shemalachta le'iser is a kli whose primary usage is for an iser. Kli shemalachta le'iser is only allowed to be moved letzorech gufo, if you need it, or letzorech mekomo. I hope you all got the chart that I sent out. So the Shulchan Aruch here says that there are those who are matir, he's quoting from the Rush, that any kli shemalachta le'iser can be moved for any purpose, even just to protect it from chamal etzel. That's not the normal rules of a kli shemalachta le'iser, but any kli shemalachta le'iser can be moved for any purpose if you do it al yedei a kikar or a tinok. What does that mean? It means that if you place a piece of bread, or you place a baby, or as the Mishnah Berurah here says in Chaf Vav, lav davka kikar, hu adin, if you put some type of heter object on top of the Dvar Muksa, so then you're allowed to move the Dvar Muksa because it's quote unquote as if you're moving it for the bread or for the baby. So this would be a real workaround in order to be able to move something that's Muksa. You could put an object on top of it, a heter object, and then move it for the heter object. So do we hold like this? It's interesting. You see the Shulchan Aruch says, Yesh matirim. There are those who are matir. So if you look in the Mishnah Berurah that I was just reading, Chavav, so he keeps going and he says like this. Vihine deyazu hidas harosh. This is the Rosh's opinion. Aval, harbe meharishonim cholkim alze, usfirluhu delohitiru kikar v'tinok, Elo lemeis bilvad letaltalo al yedehem. There are many Rishonim that learn that Gemara, which allowed David HaMelech to be moved, his body to be moved by Shlomo, by putting a kikar or a tinok on top of the body, right? That gets like a little bit dark if we start talking about putting a baby on top of the dead body. But if you put the baby or you put the roll on top of the body, that's what the Gemara said. Gemara said, didn't say you could do that for any kli shemalachta le'iser. It said it's specifically for a dead body. And we can all right away start coming up with a very good explanation of why maybe this is only for a dead body. It could be kavod hames. It could be because it's very disturbing to have the body in the room for the people who are alive and still in the room. So the Gemara there says it about a dead body. So apparently the Rosh took that and extended it to any muksa, or at least to a kli shemalachta le'iser, and said what works for a dead body, I mean, a dead body is very serious muksa. That's muksa machmas gufo, or that's a very serious form of muksa. So a kli shemalachta le'iser, which we said is already a quasi-muksa, it's not a serious muksa, because you're allowed to move it letzorach makomo, you're allowed to move it letzorach gufo, and therefore, the Rush says, let's extend this din to a kli shemalachta le'iser as well. So the Mishnah Berurah here says, this is the opinion of the Rush, But many Rishonim disagreed with this, and they felt that this heter was only for a mace. Now, if you skip a line in the Mishnah Berurah, he says, "B'chol ze dafka im yaniach b'sochakli shar davar sheno miyuchad la, aval im munach sham davar hamiyuchad la." So all of this halacha, again, the Mishnah Berurah seems to be telling us that even though the Shulchan Aruch quotes this opinion of the Rosh, but most Rishonim disagree. Says the Mishnah Berurah now, just be aware that all of this is dealing specifically with a situation where the Dover Heter that you're putting on the Dover Muksa is not naturally placed in the Dover Muksa. It's not normal to put a baby or a roll on top of a dead body. That's something that clearly is being done just in order to move the dead body. But if it's a Dover Heter, which normally rests in this Dvar Muksa, so then, says the Mishnah Berurah, aval imunach sham Dover HaMiyuchad La, for instance, the Medocha, Sheshochakin Ba, the, I don't know what the word is in English, the, when you make garlic, so the garlic, it's in a kli, and there's this heavy metal piece that you smash the garlic with. Right, you're familiar with what I'm talking about? These like the olden days that they make garlic. So if you have the garlic inside this kli, o shemunach b'kedera k'tzas me'atavshil, or if you have, let's say, a pot. We know a pot is a kli shmalach d'lisser. So if you have a pot, but you have food in the pot, so now you just put a dover heter inside of a dover muksa, because why is a pot a kli shmalach d'lisser? Because its normal function is for cooking, which is a malacha. So, a garlic press, thank you. So if you put the garlic inside the press, I don't know if that's the piece on top or if it's the whole contraption, but if you put the garlic on top of the, inside the kli, which is its normal place that it goes, or, right, a roll on top of a dead body is not so normal. But to put a roll on top of a... maybe a roll is not so common, but to put pasta inside of a pot, that's very normal because that's where it normally is kept. And therefore, l'kuli alma, you're allowed to be metaltel the kli agav the machel. So says the Mishnah Berurah, this idea that you can move a devar muksa, a kli shmalach l'iser, when there's a dover heter resting on it, there's a big, when you put a devar heter into it and then you want to move it, there's a big distinction. If it's something that normally you put it in, so then you can move it. Everybody agrees to that. But when it's something which is not naturally placed on this type of Dvar Muksa, so then you're not able to move it except according to the Rosh, but according to everyone else, only when you're dealing with a dead body. Now, it's very interesting. When you have something like a pot, which is a Kli Shmalach D'Iser, and I put food, I'm putting food in it right now. I have a pot, I want to move it. So I put some food in it, and then I'm able to move it wherever I want. So the poskim, the Dirshu brings this down, the poskim debate, what's the status of the pot right now? Does that make the pot into a kli shmalach d'leheter? Or does that make the pot batel to the food? And we look at the pot as if it's like the food. What's the distinction? What's the difference if we look at the pot as now a kli shmalach d'leheter, or if we look at the... Or if we look at the pot, that it has the status of the food. There's a very move big... What was that?
Move it for no reason.
Excellent, right. We said that a kli shmalach d'leheter can only be moved for some tzorech. You can't move it shelo l'tzorech klal. We had a little bit of debate about what that means. But if it's food, we said food can be moved even shelo l'tzorech klal. So if putting the pasta inside the pot on Shabbos, and now I can move my pot, if it turns it into a kli shmalach d'leheter, then I can move it as long as I have a purpose. But if it actually becomes like the food, it's batel to the food, so then I'd be able to move it even shlo l'tzorech. Okay, how do we paskin in terms of this whole putting a kikar or a tinok on top of a dvar muksa and moving it? And I want you to know, in case you're thinking like, this is so impractical, I can tell you a shaila I saw this week relating to this. Somebody wrote in on our rabbi chat that one of their congregants is has like, I don't know, one of these like home internet businesses or sells things on Amazon or whatever. And he was expecting a delivery of computer flat screens, like 10 computer flat screens. And it was supposed to rain. And the delivery person was going to leave them outside and was going to be coming on Shabbos delivery. And he didn't want to leave it all outside in the rain. But they're muksa. It's merchandise. It's flat screens. So he wanted to know, is there any way that he could bring them into the house on Shabbos? So, okay, there might be issues of tchum. There could be a bunch of issues with this. But one of the things that he asked is the rabbi asked in our group, is it possible to put a piece of bread on each of the flat screens and then carry them in, agav the bread that's on top? So that's our shaila right here. If we pass like the Shulchan Aruch, so seemingly that would be okay. The flat screen, unless we start considering the flat screen not a klishma achlisser, maybe the flat screen is even worse. It's merchandise. It's muksa machmas chesrin kis. So that's our question. What would that work? So the Yalkut Yosef is make like the Shulchan Aruch here. I mean, he rules like Pasman's like the Shulchan Aruch here. And he says, yes, you're able to use a klisha malach dul iser and place a non-muksa item on top of it. Rabbi Kivi Eger goes even further. If you look in the source sheet, it's source 52. Rabbi Kivi Eger says, it doesn't just mean klisha malach dul iser. It means other farms as muksa as well. Hu adin, I'm reading from source 52 in the source sheet. Hu adin klishu muksa machmas chesron kis, nira demutter. So says Rabbi Kivi Eger, this is true about a klishim lach, the Shulchan Aruch says it about a klishim lach delisser, and Rabbi Kivi Eger says it even about muksa machmas chesron kis. So if you paskin like this, so you would be able to put the rolls on top of these flat screens and move them inside. Now in the Mishnah Berurah though, you get the impression that he's not so excited about paskin like the Shulchan Aruch here, right? His comment is, all the other Rishonim disagree with this. So if you look in the Shar HaTzion on the bottom of the page, Shar HaTzion Chaf Dalid. So look what he says. He's quoting here, this is in the middle of the discussion here, about how many Rishonim disagree. V'chein hechriu harbe achronim, the achronim also. Says the Shar HaTzion, umikom mokom, kasuv behagraz, it says in the Shulchan Aruch Harav, te behefseid meruba yesh lahakel. That if we're talking about a significant loss, you're able to be nakel like the Shulchan Aruch. And in Shmir Shabbos Kilchasa, in the chapter on Muksa, chapter Chaf, in footnote Yud Zayin, towards the beginning of the piece, he writes in the Shmir Shabbos Kilchasa that this heter of Mokon Hefseid applies to all forms of Muksa. Klisha Malach Dula Isser, Muksa Machmas Gufo, Muksa Machmas Kesrin Kis. If there is a Hefseid Meruba, you'd be able to move it in. So, says the, according to that, again, there might be an issue of Tchum, but in terms of Muksa, it would seem that this gentleman would be able to move his merchandise into the house. Obviously, he should try to work it out that the delivery doesn't come on Shabbos. But if the delivery comes on Shabbos, so Lechor, that would be considered a case of Hefseid Meruba to lose 10 flat screens. I would imagine that that's considered Hefseid Meruba. And he'd be able to, by putting a piece of bread on top of the box, he'd be able to bring them in. Okay. Avi, you're asking about when you put food into the kli? So I guess depends. If you put it on top of the dead body, I hear that. But just putting it on top of a... I know in France, you guys are very careful with your food and but I think a lot of people, at least in Israel, you put a roll on top of a computer, they'll still eat the roll. So it wouldn't necessarily ruin it, right? But true, if you put it on top of the dead body, so then I hear that you're not going to necessarily want to eat that roll afterwards. Is that going to be Baal Tashchis? So the truth is, it's an interesting question with Baal Tashchis, because Baal Tashchis in general, we apply when something is being destroyed for absolutely no purpose. But if I have a purpose, there's a famous tshuva to the Noda Behuda. Noda Behuda was asked about hunting. Are you allowed to hunt? So it's a fascinating tshuva for many levels, for many reasons. It's probably most famous for what the Noda Behuda writes at the end of the tshuva, which is after he goes through all the reasons why he thinks it's not usser to hunt, you know, hunting for sport, not hunting for food, hunting for sport, you know, just to enjoy. So he ends the tshuva by saying, even though I think it's mutter, why would any Jew want to just kill animals just for fun? You know, what happened to the fact that we're supposed to be rachmanim and baishanim and gomlei chasadim to kill animals just for sport? So it's interesting. The poskim discuss fishing. You know, did the Noda Yehuda, was he also against fishing? Or it was specifically, you know, shooting animals out in the wild. But in that tshuva, so he has a bunch of interesting things he discusses in that tshuva. In that tshuva, he discusses, is it bal tashchis? Just killing animals for sport. You know, you shoot the deer and you leave it just to die in the field. So he says he doesn't think that that's called bal tashchis, because since you're doing it for fun, you're doing it for sport, you're doing it for enjoyment, so that's not called wasting it. Wasting it is just wanton, just absolute destruction of something for no purpose. So here, even if it would ruin the food, I think you can make an argument that it's not bal tashchis because you're getting a benefit from it. Okay. Yeah, okay, someone asked also, what about arts and crafts to do from food? Like to use flour and water, make Play-Doh or something like that. So l'chor also, that wouldn't be a problem of bal tashchis, I would think, because you're getting a purpose from it. Okay. We are moving on to Sifvav, and Sifvav is a scary sif, but it's really not so scary, and I think we'll be fine with it. This is the official discussion of Muksa Machmas Gufo. It's something that we've spoken about a lot, and from a certain perspective, it's the most classic form of Muksa. Muksa Machmas Gufo traditionally are things like dirt, rocks, sticks, things that are Muksa, just by the nature of the fact that they have no purpose. They're on Shabbos. They're not kalim. They're not something that I'm using. And they're something that it's just automatically assumed I set them out of my head. Rocks, sticks in my backyard, things that have no purpose on Shabbos. So the Mishnah in Shabbos on Kuf Chaf Dalet, it's source 53 on your source sheet, speaks about what happens when a kli breaks on Shabbos. The Shulchan Aruch presents a broken kli as a certain classic form of muksa machmas gufo. So what happens? So if I break the Mishnah over here on Kuf Chaf Dalet, I have it on the source sheet here, number 53. So the Mishnah quotes a machlokas regarding shards of a kli, right? Broken pieces of a kli. You have an earthenware vessel, a pot, a bottle, it cracks on the floor, and now you have pieces, shards. So what is the status? In L'chora, we're talking about a kli shemalach to leheter. Meaning we're talking about, let's say here, I have a mug right here. So I dropped the mug on Shabbos, and now I just have broken pieces of the mug. So there's a machlokas between the Tanakama and Rabbi Yehuda. According to the Tanakama, as long as those shards can be used for anything, they're not muksa. You have to remember, when Shabbos began, it was a kli. So it wasn't really officially muksa. Remember, muksa gets defined at the beginning of Shabbos. It wasn't really muksa, but now it broke. And now it seems to be a piece of garbage. So at this point, l'chora, I put it out of my mind at this point because it's garbage. So says the Tanakama, well, is it garbage? If there's some use that you can make from this shard of glass, of pottery, if there's some use, like for instance, he says, if you can use it to cover a barrel, you've got a barrel of wine, there's like a little hole in the top, and you want to, you know, make sure no flies come in. So you put the shard of glass to block the hole. So Tanakama says if there's any use, it remains a kli, and it doesn't become muksa. Because it started as a kli, so it will remain a kli as long as there's some use for it on Shabbos, even if it's not the original use. Comes along Rabbi Yehuda, and Rabbi Yehuda says, no, you have to use it. It's only if it could still be used for its original purpose. So for instance, let's say I have this cup here, and in this cup I usually store oil. And now I crack it, and it cracks along here, and the bottom is still whole. It's true, the top breaks off, but the bottom is still whole. So I'm able to still store some oil in there, right? It's much less oil, but I could still store some oil. So then, according to Rabbi Yehuda, it doesn't become muksa. But if it cannot be used for its original intent, the reason I was using it, the reason it wasn't muks originally, because when Shabbos came in, if you would have asked me, is this muksa? I would have said, no, it's an oil jug. So if it could still be used as an oil jug, it's not muksa. Okay, so let's take a look now. That's the background. Let's take a look at Siv Vav. Says the Shulchan Aruch, Kol HaKelim Shenishbaru Afilu B'Shabbos. Any kli which breaks, and that's even if it breaks on Shabbos. Mutter L'Taltel Shivrehem. You're allowed to move their shards. It doesn't become muksa. Uvulvad Shiru'uyim L'Shum Malacha. As long as they can be used for any malacha. Kigon, for instance. Shivrei Areva L'Chasos Bo Asachavis. The shards, you can use them to cover a vessel. Or Shivrei Zechuchis L'Chasos Bo Piapach. Or you have broken glass, but you can use it to cover some glass bottle of some sort. You could put it on top. Avalim Einam Re'uyim L'Shum Malacha Lo. So we see here that the Shulchan Aruch is makel like the Tanakama. Doesn't paskin like Rabbi Yehuda that has to be able to be used for its original intent. As long as it has any use, it's able to be, it remains muksa. And again, that's because, now maybe let's ask the question. Wait a second. So maybe a rock shouldn't be muksa either, because I could pick a rock up off the floor and use it to cover a vessel. So it has a purpose. Maybe rocks also shouldn't be muksa. So this is comes the Mishnah Berurah and says, take a look. In Chafches, says the Mishnah Berurah, Shivrei Kelim are the second category of muksa that I discussed in my introduction. Mishum de Kishenishbaru, as soon as they break, they're like stones and they're muksa machmas gufo. Ella, however, Kevon Shibo Mikli, since they came from a kli, lo batel shem kli mehem, kozman shru'uyim l'shum davar. As long as they have a purpose, they don't lose their shem kli. They don't lose their status as a kli. Kigon, for instance, l'chasos, if you're going to use it to cover something. Ma she'en kein b'tzraros, as opposed to stones. Da'afapi shru'uyim l'chasos, even though they too can be used to cover things, lav monahem, they're not a kli. Meaning the rock, when Shabbos began, the rock wasn't a kli. The rock was just a rock and it had no purpose. So you can't turn around on Shabbos and now say, oh, I'm going to take this rock and cover my vessel with it. We're not going to learn about it today, but we will learn in the coming weeks. Am I allowed to take rocks before Shabbos and set them aside and say, I'm going to use these to cover the kli? You can do that and they wouldn't be muksa. But you didn't do that. You're waking up Shabbos morning and saying, oh, I'd like to take some rocks and use them to cover my vessel. That you can't do, that's muksa. But since the kli when Shabbos began was a kli and it wasn't muksa, so the broken pieces retain their status as a kli as long as they have a usage on Shabbos. Now if you flip to Siv Zayin, so the Shulchan Aruch here adds another important point, which is also based on the Gemara over there in Kuf Chaf Dalet. In the Gemara, we were quoting from the Mishnah. He says, Chatichas Chere Shenishbara, a piece of earthenware that broke, b'chol, and the Mishnah says, and also on Shabbos, mikli ureuya lechasos b'kli. We'll see later why he says chol. So an earthenware vessel that breaks, and it's fitting, it's roy to be lechasos b'kli. It has a purpose. Mutter l'taltala. That's what we saw in the previous halacha. Afilu b'makom she'en kelim mitzuyim sham lechasos ba. Even if you don't actually have any vessels that you're going to be covering with these shards. Meaning, it's not about whether you need it. It's about whether theoretically you can use it to cover a vessel. So the halacha that we saw in Vav was that broken shards of a kli are not muksa if they have a use. So in Zion, he just clarifies, has a use doesn't mean that you in your home have a specific use for it. It could be that you have no open wine barrels in your house. And I imagine most people here don't have open wine barrels in their house. And you don't have other kalim that need this shard. All of your open vessels, guess what? You have covers for them. You don't need the shard for that. Says the Shulchan Aruch, it doesn't matter. As long as it's roy to cover something, even if you don't actually have a need for it, it still remains non-muksa on Shabbos. Okay, the Ber Halacha, one more mucker here in this part of the discussion. The Ber Halacha, right in the beginning of Vav, if we go back to Vav, the Ber Halacha quotes from the Prima Gadim that this din is not only by Kalim Shemalachton Leheter, like for instance, my cup here that I was using for oil, it's also true about a Kli Shemalachton Leiser. If I have a Kli Shemalachton Leiser, a hammer, and the hammer breaks, and now I just have a piece of a hammer, but it's roy for a purpose. I can use it to cover a vessel. So the hammer piece does not become any more muksa than it originally was, meaning it retains its status of what it was. So what was it? Right, my cup was a kli shemalachta l'heter, which means I can move it for any purpose. So the shard also I can use and move for any purpose. When it comes to my hammer that breaks, so the point is that when it breaks, if it has a usage, it doesn't become muksa machmas gufa, which is the most machmir form of muksa. It just stays at its current level, which means that I can only move it letzorech mekomo or letzorech gufo, but it retains the status that it was. Okay, I hope that's clear. That's the introduction. Okay, here I see we have a question here. Do all shards retain the same status, or does the size of the shard matter? So it really just depends if there's a viable usage for it. If it's so tiny that you can't use it for anything, then it becomes muksa. But as long as it's big enough and it's shaped in a way that it could be used for something, so then it would retain its non-muksa status. Okay, we have to just introduce one more stage in this sugya, and then we'll be able to start getting to a practical application. So the next stage is a question on this from, there's another Gemara on Kuf Chaf Gimel about a broken needle. Okay, the Gemara there on Kuf Chaf Gimel talks about if a needle breaks on Shabbos. And here we get a different psak. The Shulchan Aruch, this is why it's so important to learn, I think, to learn Hilchos Shabbos this way, because if you just read through the Shulchan Aruch straight, it's very hard to see how things are relating to each other. So if you take a look in Simen Shinches, but now flip to Sif Yud Aleph. Okay, we were just in Vav, skip ahead to Yud Aleph. So here we have a very similar halacha, but the psak seems to be a little bit different. It says over here, Machat Shlema Mutter L'Talta L'Tolbo Es Hakotz. A machat, what would you say about a needle? What's its status? What do you think it is? What do we use a machat primarily for? Go ahead. I heard somebody open. Yeah, go ahead.
Sewing.
Right, sewing. And therefore, what would that make the needle into? Because sewing is a malacha. Muksa kli shemalachta l'iser. Right. It's a kli whose primary purpose is for doing a malacha. But that's not the only thing you use a needle for. You also use a needle for taking out right? My father's in the room. My father many times had to use the needle to take a splinter out of my finger. I mean, he usually told me to do it myself, right? That's what he usually told me, because it's very hard to know if you're hurting someone when you're not doing it on yourself. When you're doing it on yourself, so you know how hard to push. Anyway, so a needle is a kli shemalachta l'iser. So says the Shulchan Aruch, something that we understand, you're allowed to take a needle and use it with tzorach gufo. You're allowed to use it to take out a coats. Now, says the Shulchan Aruch, nital chuda o chorshala, let's say it snaps, the point snaps off, the sharp edge, or the hole for stringing the string. So then it's usser. That's what it says here. That's based on the Gemara. That as soon as the needle cracks, that's it, it's usser. Now, wait a second. Whatever happened to the principle that we learned in Vav? The principle in Vav that we learned was that if a kli breaks, there's another question you need to ask. Is there a usage for this, or is there not a usage for this? So how come in Vav, when the kli breaks, we say if there's a usage, you're able to keep it and it's not muksa? But yet in Yud Aleph, when we're talking about a broken needle, the Shulchan Aruch says that if it breaks, that's it. It automatically becomes muksa. It's usser. You're not allowed to move it. What's the difference? So says the Mishnah Berurah in Memches, in the middle of Memches, he says that a needle, the second it breaks, it loses its status as a kli because everybody throws away broken needles. And the yisod here seems to be that apparently back then, when a kli broke and you had the shards, people still use the shards for things. And therefore, as long as there's some usage for the shard, it doesn't become muksa. But when it comes to a needle, the practice was that if a needle broke, everybody threw away the needle. Oh, but maybe there's a usage for it. Maybe I can use it, I don't know, get creative. I can use it for something. No, since the derech was that you throw away broken needles, so therefore, even if you think you might have a usage for it, it doesn't matter. It becomes muksa. Now, why is this so important for us nowadays? Because if it's really dependent on what people do, so then we have a big kasha on how we're going to apply these halachos nowadays. And this is asked by Rav Nissim Karelitz in his Chut Shani. He asks that seemingly nowadays, everything that we have that breaks should fall into the category of a needle as opposed to a shard. Because don't we just throw away everything that breaks? You know, you have a bunch of broken shards. I don't mean something that breaks that you can bring to a store and fix. Say if a vessel cracks on the floor into pieces, so we throw it away. You know, I imagine most people, if their hammer breaks, so you throw it away. A lot of people, I imagine that's what they do. So the Chut Shani says that we have to sort of really make a distinction here. He says, he has an amazing line here. He says, we have to really fundamentally distinguish between something that really still has a use. It's just the way that he says it is. We bismanenu, I'm reading from source 55, noagim behit pankut. And you know what that means? Hit pankut comes from the word mifunak. Anyone familiar with that word? Yeah, go ahead. Shapsi, what does it mean? Bismanenu,
we're not. I'm very mifunak.
Okay, good. So what does that mean?
Spoiled,
right. Says, I don't think you are, but that's not what I was saying right. I was saying right in terms of defining the word. Says Rav Nissim Karelitz, nowadays, we live in a world of relative affluence. We live in a world where there's mass production because of, you know, industry. So therefore, nowadays, when your glass bottle breaks, it's so inexpensive to buy a new glass bottle that you throw away the glass bottle. But he still wants to say, but that's only because we're spoiled. But fundamentally, the shard can still be used, as opposed to a needle. Even if we weren't spoiled, even back then when they weren't spoiled, they still always threw away a needle. So he tries to, you know, excuse the pun here, he tries to really like thread the needle here with a very fine distinction between shards, which he say are really fundamentally usable today. It's just that we're spoiled, so we throw them away and we buy new ones, as opposed to needles, which are something that you really do throw away. Okay, we're gonna bring all of this practically to try to bring this to the practical level, but just one or two other things, nothing complicated. Take a look at Zion in Shulchan Aruch Zion. We already read the beginning of that. So a line in the Shulchan Aruch says like this: V'imzarka la'ashpa mi ba'od yom, asur l'taltala kevan shabatla miyos od kli. So here's a very important point. Even with the shards, which we said that the shards, since if they are usable, they don't become muksa, that's all if you didn't throw them away in the garbage. But the minute you throw them away, so then for sure they become muksa. Remember, the whole thing that's keeping them from becoming muksa is that we're saying, no, it's still a kli. I'll use it for this, I'll use it for that. It's still a kli. The minute you throw it in the garbage, it's going to lose its status of a kli. But the Mishnah Berurah in Lamed Beis says, but that's only if you threw it away before Shabbos. That's why in Zion, he specifically speaks about Bichol. If you remember, when we read the first line, Chatichas Cheres, a piece of earthenware which breaks during the week, as long as it's still Roy, you're allowed to move it, even if you don't need it for any specific purpose. So why does he say Bichol? The halacha is also on Shabbos. says the Mishnah Berurah, he wrote chol, he wrote during the week for the next part of the halacha. And that is imzarka la'ashpa. He says that since at Ben Ashmashos it was a kli, even if you throw it in the garbage, it doesn't lose its status of a kli. As long as it was a kli on Erev Shabbos and it's still usable for something, even if you decided to throw it away, it doesn't lose its status of a kli. But if it broke before Shabbos and you threw it away, so then even if on Shabbos you say, oh, you know what, maybe I will use that for something, it's too late. At that point, it becomes, it's muksa for good. Okay, the Ramah, if you go back to Vav for a second, I know we're doing a lot of things inside now, but it's, you know, these are hard simanim, so I wanted to make sure that you can read them all inside, that we can read them all inside. If you take a look in Vav, in the Ramah, so he adds another very important little halacha about this, and then we're going to move on to the practical discussion. Says the Ramah that if this glass or these shards break and they're in a place where people can get hurt, like they're in the middle of your living room floor, so then it's definitely mutter to get rid of them and to throw them away. It's a little bit of a discussion in the postgame if this means you could just do it with your hands or if you should try to do it. Now, obviously, if it's sharp glass, don't try to like pick it up with your mouth in order to be Mekayim doing it with a shinoi. But the point is that if there's a way to do it like Minatzad, right? Again, my father's in the room, so he could definitely attest to the fact we had four boys who are very similar in age. It probably happened once or twice on Shabbos that glasses were broken, you know, glasses at the Shabbos table were broken on Shabbos. I think we had Shabboses where multiple glasses were broken on Shabbos. So when you want to clean those on Shabbos, so to take a broom, so that's going to be total menatzad, you know, you're not doing it directly. That for sure is going to be okay. You don't have to leave the broken glass all over your floor until after Shabbos. Now, it might depend. Let's say you're eating on your back patio. You know, you're drinking a beer with a friend on the back patio and you drop the beer and it cracks on the floor. And you don't have any little kids in your house and it starts to rain anyway. You're going inside. Maybe you do have to leave it there unless they're big enough that there's use for them. But if it's small little pieces and it's not dangerous, so you probably have to leave it. But any glass that breaks in the house, especially if you have kids in the house, I would think immediately falls under this psak of the Ramah here. And the halacha would be that you can clean them. And again, a little bit of a discussion if you should try to do it not directly. You try to do it with something else, you know, with a broom and a dustpan, you know, not to pick it up with your hands. But as we all know, sometimes with glass, you know, you have to be very careful with your hands to pick it up or else, you know, people can get caught or you won't get it all off the ground. So that's the halacha in terms of things that are dangerous. It's interesting, Rav Nissim Karelitz, the big posek from Bnei Brak, Chodesh Ani, he even says that you can move muksa things in order to avoid a danger that's not the muksa. Like, what do I mean by that? Let's say there's a pit. You know, you're walking to shul and you see a pit in the middle of the street. So he writes that you can go and pick up wood, which is muksa, and carry it over to block. Again, we're assuming that there's an Erev or whatever. You can pick it up to cover the hole in order so that people don't fall into the hole. Right? That's a little bit different there. There you're moving a dvar muksa. It itself is not dangerous. But you're moving it in order to protect from some other danger. Okay, so if there's no Eruv, you have to maybe figure out, maybe Amir Lakum is a better way to do it, or maybe you can kick with your feet, whatever, that would be a different discussion. But certainly, let's say you have a pit in your backyard, and, or, I don't know, a meteor falls from heaven into your backyard, and it's like emitting, you know, radioactive substances, and you want to cover it with some wood, so you'd be able to do that. I said we're going to get to some practical cases. So you'd be able to move the wood in order to cover the meteorite. Okay, let's talk about a practical case or two and apply some of the principles that we were talking about. So there's a big discussion about Israeli milk bags. Okay, and those of you who live in America, so I'm sure you're and in France, I'm sure you're very happy that you use milk containers. But as you know, here in Israel, many of us use milk bags. So the question is, once the bag is ripped open and you've finished all the milk, so now this is like a shard of a kli. Why? Because it's no longer functioning. It's a kli that's lost its functionality on Shabbos. Because what are you doing with the milk bag once you're done with the milk? Or potato chip bags, or little sugar packets that, you know, you ripped open and you took out the sugar. So now you have this empty potato chip bag or this empty milk container. So if Shlomo Zalman writes, it's brought down in source 59 here on your source sheet. So Shlomo Zalman Orbach in Shulchan Shlomo writes like this. Sakit chalav, after it's completely empty, it becomes muksa. It no longer has a purpose. The empty bag of milk becomes muksa. And therefore, what do you do if you want to, meaning what's he comparing this to? He's not comparing it to a shard. What's he comparing it to? To the broken needle. It's the type of thing that once it breaks, once it's done, so everybody throws it away. It's not because we're mifunakim that we throw away the milk bags. We throw away the milk bags because there's nothing really to do with it anymore. So he says, so how do you get the milk bag out if you want to put a new milk bag in on Shabbos? So he says, one thing you can do is you can just carry the container and just spill out the milk bag into the garbage. Why? Because that's tiltul min atzad. It's not direct, it's indirect, because you're carrying the container. You're not carrying the plastic bag. And it's l'tzorech davar amutter, because you want the container. So tiltul min atzad, l'tzorech davar amutter is allowed. The only problem is, Rosh Shlomo Zalman apparently had to do this a few times, so we all know there's always that moisture on the outside of the milk bag. So it sticks to the side of the container. It's not going to come out just from shaking it. So he has another suggestion. He says, leave, and Avi, this is going to be interesting in terms of your question with the Baal Tashchis. He says, leave a tiny drop of milk left over. And as long as there's still a little bit of milk left over, it's not muksa. So pick it up and throw it away when there's a tiny little bit of milk left. And then you'll be able to throw it away and put a new milk and put a new milk bag in. It's interesting. There's a dissenting opinion. Rav Yashiv is quoted as thinking that maybe this is more like the shards, because you can refill the milk bag. You can reuse the potato chip bag. So the Orach HaShabbos writes that, you know, b'mechilas kavod to Rav Yashiv, nobody reuses a milk bag. I mean, that would be very complicated anyway. How are you going to get the milk back into that bag? So he says that we hold like Rav Shlomo. In Orach HaShabbos, he says we hold like Rav Shlomo Zalman at source 60. On your Makoto sheet.
Why can't you just do it out? Why can't you just do it?
Pick it up with and throw it away?
No, shinoi. Just take it with you.
Yeah, you can. Yeah. Again, you can almost.
Rav Shlomo Zalman mentioned that. Isn't that posture that you can do that?
All muksa. He's trying to, again, normally when the
posture. Why would I tilt it that sad if I could just, for that price, just take it with my pinky and put it in the garbage? Take it out.
I guess theoretically you should be able to. That's true. Stick your pinky in, or, you know, take a bite out of it with your teeth and bring it over to the garbage. See, I don't know, using your pinky is going to be considered a shinoi, because any using of your hand, I understand.
It's tilt of an atzad and shinoi is two different things, right?
Yes. Shinoi means carrying it in a non-normal way. I don't think that means using your hand in a non-normal way. I think it means using something besides your hand, your teeth, you know, your feet. So, you know, if you want to use your feet, you could do that. But it might be easier just to pick up the container and to dump it out like he suggests. Okay, I'm going to end with just one or two more examples just that we can, you know, understand the principle here a little bit more. What about plastic, chad pami, what's it called in English? Like disposable silverware. You know, you have a plastic bowl or a plastic spoon. So, what happens to all that stuff when we're done using them? You know, you eat a meal. Let's say you have a shal shudit. Let's say Shabbos lunch. You had a lot of guests Friday night. You know, you used all the china and you didn't want to wash it. So you're using plastic for a Shabbos lunch. And you've got all your plastic silverware. And now you're done eating. So does all that stuff become muksa? So interestingly, here, Rav Shlomo Zalman is quoted again as saying, yeah. It's like the broken, it's like the empty milk. It's like the empty plastic, the potato chip bag. It's muksa. But here, it's interesting. The Orach HaShabbos for this thinks it's different. He says, listen, plastic silverware is very easily cleanable. And there are many people that clean plastics. Okay, if it gets all gross and disgusting, they throw it away. But there are a lot of people, you know, you add some cereal with a plastic spoon. You know, the plastic spoon is just as good, just as usable. You can just rinse it off and it's usable right away. And Rav Asher Weiss also says like this, that something like plastic silverware is different than a potato chip bag. Potato chip bag, nobody reuses a potato chip bag. You throw away a potato chip bag. The inside of it is all oily and disgusting, and it's probably ripped a little bit, the bag. But a plastic spoon that you used for cereal, so there's nothing. Again, we might be more, you know, spoiled and say, oh, I'll throw it away, I'll get more. Again, I'm using spoiled. You know, a lot of us, I think, do throw away plastic silverware.
But it doesn't go to the person?
So he says not. He says that since plastic silverware is something, again, that's our chiluk between the shards and the needles. We don't ask, what do you do with needles? What do you do with shards? Sifvav tells us, shards people reuse, even if you're not going to reuse it. But shards are people, things that people reuse. And needles are not. And that's why with all these questions, we have to figure out, is this a shard or is this a needle? So when it comes to plastic bag, the potato chip bags, yeah, that's a needle. It's throw it away. Nobody reuses it. But plastic silverware is so easily reused, whether we do or not. So the post can say that's what the Orach HaShabbos says to do. And so that's what they say, that these types of these types of things are going to be considered not muksa. Now, for sure, if it gets disgusting, you would throw it away. But if it gets disgusting, there's another reason you're able to pick it up and throw it in the garbage, at least. And that's because of the halacha of a graf shel rei. That's going to be our heter to throw away the garbage. The garbage bag is not garbage bag is the best example of something that's muksa, right? It's garbage. It's clearly muksa. Now, we said not necessarily, because if you throw it away on Shabbos, it doesn't necessarily become muksa. Okay, so we're going to have to discuss the halacha of graf shel rei. One last thing, which is a very fascinating discussion, is a key. This is also something discussed in the Orach HaShabbos. This is in source 61. Someone asked him about a key that you change the locks already. So that's another type of kli which has lost its functionality because it no longer opens my house because it's just a key. So he says there that in Achanami, that key becomes muksa. Unless you give it to kids to play with, then it's not muksa. He says, but as opposed to, let's say I'm on vacation, my house key doesn't become muksa just because I'm in, Dubai for Hanukkah. My house key doesn't become muksa because it still is a functioning kli. It happens to be on the other side of the world. It's not the other side of the world, but it happens to be 1,000 miles away that it's a functioning kli. But it's still a functioning kli. But a key that's no longer used, that we probably all have in a closet somewhere in our house, like a whole bunch of keys that we just don't use anymore. They're for the old machsan, they're for the old car. So those keys are all muksa because of this halacha. They're kalim that have absolutely lost their purpose or their use. Okay, that's it for tonight.